On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we welcome in Eddie Barsilli, the host of the Yards Per Attempt podcast, giant Raider fan, and also SiriusXM NFL, there for about a decade. He told stories about Jerry Rice, Brett Favre, talked about the Raiders, a lot of good stuff. We also talk about how Derek Carr talks about Josh McDaniels as a genius and the interview that he did about that. Baker Mayfield to the Panthers, and week one betting lines are out. Football season is so close, and we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. Guest on the show today. Normally, it's just you and I doing all the heavy lifting. We're not one of these other podcasts or YouTube channels where it's just like, you know what? We don't know what to talk about. Let's bring in an old-fashioned Tom, Dick, or Harry and talk to them for 45 minutes. No.
Who's Harry Dick?
It's Tom's.
Oh.
Harry Dick. We call him Mr. Harry when he's dirty. But this time, we're like, hey, let's bring in a fresh voice.
Class up the joint.
Yeah, right? Drag this show out of the gutter. So Eddie Barsilli, he has worked at SiriusXM's NFL channel for over a decade. Raiders fan, has a Raiders pod, all that good stuff. He's going to join us here shortly. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, of course. That's where you follow all of our good stuff.
Hit that little notification button down there so you know every time RJ and I go live or when a new video drops.
Otherwise, we're just speaking into nowhere. Who wants that? Question of the day. So this question will be down at the pinned at the top of the comment section. Curious what you guys think. What do you make of Aaron Rodgers' new and first tattoo? You guys pushing 40. Finally got his very first tattoo. And it's Aaron Rodgers. So you know it's not going to be a barbed wire across his bicep. It's not going to be a tribal band as a tramp stamp. It's not going to be his last name tattooed across his neck.
In case he forgets.
It's going to be something intricate and a little weird. And that's exactly what it is. Aaron Rodgers tattoo.
Dude, you said barbed wire, tribal, all that stuff. I don't know how this can be. This is so much douchier than getting that.
Is it?
Yes.
It's not. You got to admit it's original. You got to acknowledge. Well, first off, let's just describe it. So it's a circle with two lions facing each other. That eye that's on the dollar bill is in there. It looks like that circle is the world. And then underneath that circle is another circle with an ocean. Underneath that ocean, that looks like a fan that someone would, like a geisha girl would use in Japan. And then behind all of that.
It's supposed to be a balancing thing, a balanced thing.
And then behind all of that, it's constellations.
Yeah, there's constellations
up
top.
Random symbols.
The random symbols. It's all that extra shit. It's meant to represent balance. Because if you notice, everything is symmetrical on one side to the other. All the circles, all the little things, and in the bottom part, everything's balancing on a point. It's like, and it's meant to symbolize balance.
There are not enough mushrooms on planet Earth for me to be able to take to understand this tattoo.
Basically, it's talking about balance because you have one fucking fierce lion on one side, and then you have the calm lion on the other side. You have one dark side of the world, one light side of the world.
You have
the influence of water.
It's you have Super Bowl Aaron Rodgers on one side. You have Jeopardy Aaron Rodgers on the other.
Exactly. And look, it's like the world's like sitting on, it's like basically floating on water, on ocean, like the calming, you know, the calm and the storm, that, you know, It basically symbolizes a balance of, you know, all this stupid shit. It's like he tries to be like super. I just saw it. I flash saw it, when before we started the show, but then now that we're really looking at it and know exactly what it means, and he's trying to be super like intricate and like, wow, you have to really
have no clue what it means.
For the meaning. Dude, I'm telling you,
this is like trying to understand an M. Night Shyamalan film. Like, you can literally make up anything and Shyamalan's gonna be like, yeah, that's right.
He's like the idiot guy, your idiot friend of yours that gets drunk and he tries to be all like philosophy major about it. Like, yeah, bro, life is just about, it's just about, you know, circular movements, man. It's just all, everything comes back around. Get the fuck out of here, Aaron Rodgers, you freaking waste of skin.
The constellations are what get me. With weird symbols. Like, it looks like a, it looks like a treasure map from the year 2450.
It looks like one of those, he took a page out of a geometry book and like did a whole stick and stay type of thing.
0% chance he was sober when he A, came up with this, and B, said, you know what, this is going to look great on my arm.
All the symbols of balance, of symmetry, I want those.
I will acknowledge, when it comes to the quality of the work, it's really good. Like, not what it means or how pleasing to the eye it is, but when you're like, all right.
No, he spent a couple bucks on it.
Oh, dude, I mean, he's a bajillionaire, so you know he's got the money. When you go to like, all right, these are all at like perfectly straight angles. Those lions look exactly like lions. That ocean scene looks gorgeous. No,
it's nice. It's good.
Gorgeous. Like, a very, very talented artist did this. Now, a very insane person came up with the design, but the guy who held the needle was a gifted artist.
Dude, if I was a defensive end, I would just dig my fingers into his hand and arm and just scratch and just to scar his arm up. Like, oh, sorry, bro. Fucked up your shit.
Put a little like bleach underneath your fingernails just to like really get in there.
Oh, yeah.
Scar it up.
Let your nails get up.
A couple white lines across it.
Oh, God.
How much do you think that thing cost?
$2,000? A couple grand, probably easy. I mean, depending
on it. Takes up his whole forearm.
If you went to somebody who's like known or in the tattoo world, it probably cost them maybe a little bit more. I would say maybe around $3,000 to $4,000 with tip.
$3,000 to $4,000.
Yeah, probably. That's a lot of intricate work, man. That takes a lot of time.
Like one side shaded.
Yeah.
You could, if you lined up, if dark you said, all right, here's a tattoo. I don't know the skin tone. I don't know who it belongs to. And you guys say, all right, this is just a tattoo. Like, you wrote this on a piece of paper and say, which NFL player just put this on their body?
Oh, easy. Aaron Rodgers.
I'd absolutely say Aaron Rodgers. Like, the guy's at least very on brand.
If I was him, I would just wear a long sleeve shirt. Just cover that shit up all the time.
I think that's why he's like, all right, I can get away with this because I play in Wisconsin. And so I'm wearing long sleeves all the time because it's below freezing 6 months a year. If he played in Phoenix, he'd be like, I'm going to put it on my back. I'm going
to. At least I know how this is in Chicago. If you're a player, like especially if you're a lineman and you wear sleeves, you will be like, and you're a home player, you will be mercilessly ridiculed by the Chicago Bears fans if you wear sleeves. I don't know if that's the way, same way in Green Bay, but that's the way.
So do you get more ridiculously ridiculed in Green Bay for having this tattoo or having a sleeve that covers this tattoo?
Only if the sleeve has like a tribal painting on it. Or is it like one of those fake tattoo sleeves?
How, if you're a Green Bay Packers fan, how do you defend this? I just say, like, yeah, that's my quarterback. He's all football all the time.
It's kind of like leader. It's kind of like when when your buddy starts a fight with somebody at a bar and gets knocked out in one punch, and you're just like, fuck.
It's like, yeah,
you gotta drag him out. You're like, come on, man. So now you're seeing with the guy that just got knocked out. You're like, God damn, it makes me look bad.
So that's the question of the day. What do you make of Aaron Rodgers' tattoo? Pin down in the comment section. Very curious what you guys think. I have no tattoos. Not a tattoo aficionado at all. But I do know a douche look when I see one. Curious.
Pretty
you
rough, think. Man. Pretty
what
rough.
Make Aaron Rodgers' tattoo? All right. So, Derek Carr did not an in-depth interview. Not really a... Not a lot. Not a... We're not going to do a bunch of videos on this, but it's worth looking at. Phil Perry did an interview for NBC Sports Boston. And he touched mostly on Josh McDaniels. All good things to say, because that's an ad. We can go back to it later.
Okay.
Cool down, horn dog.
Oh, shit. That's hot shit.
This is what I had to say. Derek Carr, talking about Josh McDaniels. The depth of the conversations that we're having is encouraging. It's fun for me. The best part of my game has always been the mental side, and that's how Josh is. He's a genius when it comes to scheming things up and teaching a system and getting the best out of his players. Which is what we've been saying about him for a long time, right? Like, a lot of coaches have a lot of strengths. Some of them are just leaders of men. Maybe not the genius X's and O's. Like, Pete Carroll isn't, like, a great schemer. But, A, he knows how to cheat when he's at USC. And he knows how to lead NFL players, right? Josh McDaniels, the thinker, an adjuster. Took the big brain on Brad.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not that surprising. That's the first thing that came to Derek Carr's mind. He also continues, I feel like a better football player, and I've had a lot of great coaches. He's come in, and he sees those things. Wow, that's awesome. What about this, too? What about this here? It helps me grow. It's been really fun to be around him. So this has been something that's been repeated multiple times. Davante Adams said the exact same thing about Josh McDaniels. Davante Adams said, yeah, you know, he, like, respects my knowledge of the sport. He's obviously my coach and an offensive genius, but he'll come to me and ask, hey, what do you think of this? Or he'll have a suggestion about what we think we should do on offense, and he'll ask me what I think and what should I change. And he'll go ask, hey, Davante, what do you think we should do? It's like, okay, I'm going to take your contribution under advisement, and we should do it. We should alter it this way. And he's saying the exact same thing to Derek Carr. So this is another good sign, Soto, for your extreme positivity with Josh McDaniels and my more kind of measured optimism. Is that the big thing is, how is Josh McDaniels handling egos, personnels, superstars? And it looks like one of his strategies are, Davante, you're so smart. What do you think? Derek, you're so smart. What do you think? Appealing to their intellect and to another extent, appealing to their ego. And so far, at least verbally, it's had screaming results.
Well, I mean, it's just like the saying is, tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I understand. So
I've never heard that saying.
Really?
Is that Confucius?
I don't know where I got it. I heard it a long time ago. But this is what I was talking about when I was talking about John Gruden's offense and how he has an offense and that's it. And he just plugs you into that offense.
Yeah.
Whereas week to week, he's going to pull things from different tapes. You're going to see things that teams have been running against us. Week 1, 2, 3, you'll see that in week 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. Similar schemes, because you're going to pull things from things that he sees on tapes. So asking Derek Carr, because he knows some of the personnel, what's been successful with, you know, with Waller or with Renfro or whatever, what have you seen against these defenses in the AFC West? And he could start building some plans, and they start working together and build some schemes around that. And it's just, you know, being more creative, being more flexible, being more fluid. We're going to see a lot of different looks offensively, and they're going to change from week to week.
And it sounds like there'll be a lot of input from the players, or at least Josh McDaniels is making it sound like there's going to be a lot of input from the players. And honestly, that's just a smart thing to do. Like, Derek Carr, very smart player. Davante Adams, very smart player. At least the two guys that have talked about Josh in such a way. And it's building on what you have, right? So, like, of course, Mike Florio, he saw this and he's like, oh, wow, he's talking good about Josh McDaniels. That means he's shitting all over John Gruden. That's clearly what that means. It's like, no, like, Derek Carr literally just said, I've had a lot of good coaches and Josh is building on that knowledge.
Yeah, Gruden has nothing to do with this. The question was about
nothing to do with it. Gruden was the opposite, right? Gruden's like, forget everything you know about football. Now we're going to do it my way.
Everything. Exactly. Right?
We're going to do it my way. Josh McDaniels is, teach me everything you know about football.
Incorporate it into what
Now this is the next step. And that's what Derek Carr is saying. Not shitting on Gruden. He's like, yeah, I had a lot of great coaches. And now all my knowledge is now Josh McDaniels' knowledge. Because, you know, let's be honest. Like, is Josh McDaniels going to be the head coach of the Raiders for the next 25 years? I hope so, because that means he's killing it. But most likely not. And if Josh McDaniels is going to stop in Las Vegas, he's going to want to know everything Derek Carr knows for his future. He's going to want to know everything Devontae Adams knows for his future. Now, short term, the Vegas future is the number one thing he's thinking about, but he's going to want to know what they're thinking about everything. Like, any good coach, any good student of any occupation, or any good member of any sort of occupation is a student of that trade. Yeah, sounds like Josh McDaniels is the ultimate student.
Wants to learn a lot. And we're going to see it half to half too. And during halftime, hey, Hunter, how are they defending you? What are they doing in this look, in this formation? What are they doing? You know, I see what the film says. I see what the pictures say, how they're lining up against you. What are they doing to you? And he'll scheme something up, right? Okay, hey, Derek, on this look, in this formation, when we see this, this is what we're going to do instead. And it's going to be as simple as that. And it's harder to defense schematically. If you have the right players, if you have the right scheme, if you're able to confuse Derek Carr, it was a little bit easier to handle a John Gruden offense because it wasn't complex as far as you didn't know what was going to come. But, you know, the fact that he has something for every way you're going to defend him is a little bit more difficult. So you just have to throw something a little bit different in disguise. Mm-hmm. When you have an offense that's more fluid, it's going to be a little more difficult to do that because they don't know exactly what you're going
to
do.
And empowering your players to make decisions, right? Like Derek Carr is so good pre-snap. Josh McDaniels wants him to be like, all right, let's understand what page we're all on. And then when you're lining up and you see Devontae and he sees something and you see something and you give each other a glance and you're reading each other's minds, go do it. You're not like, well, mm-hmm. No, Josh said we have to do this. It's nope. We're all on the same page. I've learned from you.
We all see the same thing.
I've learned from you. You've learned from me. That corner, only 5'9", shading inside a little too much. There's your out route. Just kind of look at each other and you know it, right? Like that's, you saw that with like Tom Brady and Gronk all the time, right? Like Gronk would be in a 3-point stance and just kind of like look over. They both look at each other and be like, oh, that's going for 6. Like they both see something.
Yeah,
right?
They see something exactly.
Josh wants that, right? And he knows he's got it. Derek Carr, great pre-snap. Devontae Adams, super smart. They've all played in college, right? Like that is there. And it feels like Josh McDaniels is like trying to like germinate and let that naturally happen.
Yeah, I mean, famously, I remember a play, an old school play with the Dolphins with Dan Marino and Mark Duper. And they got a pass play down to like the 1 or 2 yard line. And the play called was to hurry up down and spike the ball and stop the clock. Mm-hmm. When they ran down there, they saw both Duper and, or I think it was Clayton. Those two Marks, Mark Clayton, Mark Duper, was yep. Mark Clayton. And, Dan Marino looks over and Clayton looks back at him and they're like, dude, this fucking corner is like way back. Mm-hmm. And they just gave each other a look and everyone else was like, oh, the line was blocking in for a spike and he just tossed it over to Clayton for a touchdown.
Yep.
And it just took a look. They asked him after the game, like, oh yeah, he came over and he just gave me a little look and I knew what we were going to do. And that's what you get empowered to do.
True story. My final speech for my public speaking course in college, I did the Dan Marino Hall of Fame speech, because in the speech he literally throws a pass to Mark Clayton in the stands. He's like, hey, for one last time, I want to throw a touchdown to Mark. And he grabs a football. Mark's like, go. And I wanted to do that in the classroom for like bonus points, you know, like you want to do something like big and flashy. So I was like, and plus there was a chick I was sitting next to that I was trying to like hook up with. So I said, hey, do you want to be my wide receiver for my speech?
Damn.
I didn't know.
You're a tight end. You want to be a wide receiver?
I got an A in the class, didn't score with the chick.
F with the
50-50. What can you do? So Derek Carr continues. One thing Josh has done is he's coming and he says, this is not New England. This is Las Vegas. We're going to do things our way. I've learned a lot of great things there that we're going to implement, but I also have some things that I want to do my way. I think culture-wise, he's brought in his own vision and his own way of doing things. It's different than what he wanted to do in Denver. Boy, that's music to my ears. It's different than New England. It's what we're going to do in Las Vegas. He's a great guy, and I absolutely love him. So damn. This is the second part that we were worried about, or at least I was, about Josh McDaniels. First one is, has he learned from his mistakes? Second one is he just trying to replicate what happened in New England? Just doing the Patriot way. It worked, and that's basically what every other coach that's come out of New England and failed elsewhere has done, is we're just going to replicate what we did in New England. It's like, well, you're not New England. You don't have Robert Kraft. You don't have Tom Brady. You don't have Bill Belichick. You don't have that front office. It's different. You're different. And you can't say, Bill Belichick can say, do it my way. It works. And if you're a rookie, you're going to say, yes, sir. He's got the rings. Josh McDaniels can't say, do it my way. It works. He hasn't done shit. So him saying and telling Derek Carr, we're not going to do it the Patriot way. We're not going to be the Patriots. I learned a ton there. We're going to implement it here. We're going to do it the Las Vegas Raider way. So the two biggest concerns I had for Josh McDaniels, it's almost like Josh is like, all right, RG's worried. Let me tell Derek Carr the two things they're going to make him feel better. Doing things just the Patriot way and doing things only his way. Sounds you like know, he's addressed both.
And that's what I saw during his initial press conference. He really said all the right things. And if you're going to be such an egomaniac that you're going to fail so miserably at one spot, but still want to do things the same way, you're not going to really learn from things. You're not going to have the type of control that it's going to take for you to say the things that he said in a press conference.
And not to cut you off, but it's one thing to say it in a presser. It's another thing to convince your quarterback of it and then have him echo it. It means so much more coming from Derek than it does coming from Josh in a presser.
Yeah. And you know, I've been a part of both sides of that coin where I get leadership coming in and you can just tell right away, oh, this guy's going to be a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And you know, just, he tries to say all the right things, but you pick up on a couple little things. You're like, oh wow, that's not good. But he said all the right things. And even through all of the pressers during the owners meetings and through, pre-draft stuff and all that free agency stuff. He's been knocking out of the park, and it just sounds like every time I heard McDaniels or Ziegler or Champ, even when they talk about things, they're all moving in the same direction. They all seem to have the same vibe and the same kind of verbiage going forward. Moving forward is what we want. This is what we're looking for. And we're looking for people who can grow, smart players who can learn, who can process things quickly, you know, stuff like that. So it's encouraging.
I like what I'm hearing. And again, we're all just kind of hearing it, right? Like until they start hiking the football, and I can smell that grass. And Allegiant Stadium's full of 70,000 people. It's all kind of words, but by like very specific concerns, it sounds like Josh McDaniels is making a concerted effort to address those two things, which is great. All right. Joining us next, Eddie Borsilli. He is at NFL Radio at SiriusXM for years. Big giant Raider fan, Raider podcast, the whole nine yards.
Oh, that shit.
Here's our conversation with Eddie. And joining us now, you can catch him on the Yards Per Attempt podcast. He's also big wig over there at SiriusXM. My boss at SiriusXM, Eddie Borsilli. How you doing?
Guys, it's a pleasure to be on here. I've enjoyed your work from afar for a while. So let's talk some Raider football, man. I'm pumped.
Perfect. Yeah, we're like that chick that's good from afar, but far from good. We're usually best enjoyed from a distance. But now that you're in and you're seeing how the sausage is made, we'll see if you're still a fan.
You're still a fan of the sausage.
Everybody's a fan of Little Sausage.
Yeah, why not?
So here we are, 67 days away from opening day. Not that anyone's counting. Your expectations, general expectations for this season, because you know, you look at the AFC West, and on paper, best division in football, right? When like Derek Carr, who's like top 12-ish best quarterback, is like arguably the worst quarterback in the division, like you're sitting pretty. But there's just so many question marks surrounding so many of these teams. Like, Russell Wilson's still the same guy. Can that defense without Fangio be successful in Denver? Brandon Staley, I think, is going to continue to like ruin that great Chargers roster.
Yeah.
And then Kansas City without Tyreek Hill, with you know some losing some defensive players, the cap space, and then of course the Raiders. Let's be honest, two decades of incompetence. Can that be turned around right now? I mean, what are your like general expectations for the Raiders in the AFC West?
So I liken it, look, on paper, I think it's the best division in football, right? I think you have every single possible thing from every single team in a division. You have higher powered offense. Just like you said, you have good defenses. I kind of likened it to the NFC East back in the day when those teams just went against each other and kind of just kicked each other's butts all up and down the football field. Mm-hmm. And the division winner was 9-7 or 10-6 at best. Look, we've all seen these teams play. I think the Chiefs and their offense will be probably okay later in the year. It's going to take some adapting without Tyreek Hill. They still got guys. They still got Travis Kelce. They still got guys going to stretch the field. The Russell Wilson thing, I think if the teams in the AFC West withstand the Russell Wilson barrage, and when I said Russell, you know, when they do the let Russ cook thing, it's like 6 to 8 weeks when this dude is the best quarterback and the best player in the league, and then it kind of just dips a little bit. So I think the Denver situation probably scares me a little bit because we all seen the Chargers. The Chargers, no matter how good they are, think about the Chargers years back, 14-2 record. They get knocked out in the first round of play. They're always going to find ways to kick themselves in the ass and knock themselves out. So I think on paper, it's the best division, hands down. I think every single game in AFC West is going to be knock them down, drag out, high scoring. You want to say old school AFL type deal. But the Raiders, to me, took that step last year, guys, when they proved, when there was a million different things thrown at them, the rug situation, the Gruden thing, everything. The core of this team is back. You add in guys like Devontae Adams and stuff. I just think you mentioned it before, RJ, 20 years of this team being just so bad and so inept in so many ways, and they finally crossed that bridge. I think that really proved to this core group of players that this team can get over the hump, that they could be a playoff team year in and out. And we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a long season, like you said, to play in the first preseason game. But to me, on paper, the AFC West is just it's just stupid loaded. It's going to be a battle all year long.
Yeah, it's like it's weird with the Raiders. Like the ESPN and like PFF came out with their like rankings of the roster, like just rankings of the roster, not predicting their record, not predicting where they finish. It's just like ranking the roster. And they had the Raiders at 21st or 23rd, yeah. Like 21, right?
Yeah, 21.
21. And I'm like, you know what? I can't. It's hard for me to argue that because just pure player by player, it's not a great roster. But because it's the beauty of football, it's the ultimate team sport. Like when the Raiders went on their 4-game win streak to close out last season, they beat basic like every single one of those four teams was more talented than them. Yep. The Chargers are more talented than the Raiders at almost every single position, minus like tight end and kicker, right?
That's what I mean.
And yet we still beat them, right? I think there's like something special in the water in Las Vegas that really came to fruition last season. And now it's a matter of, can that continue, right? Was that Rich Bisaccia like loving these guys to success? Was it Derek Carr being a leader? Was it the entire team being a leader? Were they rallying around all the adversity that they had to handle over this season? Is that what drove them? Like, I don't know what it is, Eddie, but I hope it continues. Whatever that intangible, in the podcast, you can't see me moving my hands, but it's an intangible like thing that willed them to success.
Yeah, and I'm a big proponent too of, you know, teams in sports getting hot at the right time. It's not, like you said, it's not always the most talented team, but it's the team that goes on the winning streak to end the year that really gets momentum. The Raiders kind of proved that last year. The Raiders are going to have to prove it. The people are going to doubt them. I was talking to someone earlier today, and they're like, you know, the Raider over-under set at 8.5. I believe the 8.5 because the Raiders haven't proved to anybody besides last year that they could win consistently, win double-digit games. So I think that's a fair number, especially in this division. But I agree. I think there's something special, bro. If you get those core guys to buy in, Carr, Waller, guys along the offensive line, some of the guys on the defense to buy in and say, this is what we do now. We're not the old Raiders. We're not the team that gets kicked down and we go down. We're matching up a team in the first half and it's 21-21 and we give up a long run and it breaks our back and we lose by 37. Like that those days need to be over. It needs to be moved past it. And I think the secret sauce could possibly be Josh McDaniels. I've seen a guy in my time in the league, when he had his first crack at it, he was not obviously mature enough. It was a little bit too big for him. He tried to come in there and change things around and trade dudes and be like, I'm the man here. You could do it. I think he's matured in a sense to know what he has in this roster. He could have had a pick of any litter of teams around it. He could have had the Colts job. He could have had any pick of the litter of teams, and he chose to come here. He chose to come here for Derek Carr. He chose to come here for this roster. They didn't know they were getting Devontae Adams at the time. So I think if you marry up what they did last year.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. If you marry those the two things up with Josh McDaniels and he doesn't try to be Bill Belichick, I think you get something special here. And you're going to get it right in Derek Carr's prime and right in the spot where this team needs to be hitting on all cylinders.
That was my big thing with, I mean, I'm a lot more optimistic than my two cohorts here with Rory, who isn't here, and RJ. Like, you know, I'm like, look, I've been there myself where I've been in leadership positions and maybe I wasn't ready yet. And, you know, even though my instruction was sound, maybe my dealing with the individual wasn't as good, and I alienated some people because of that. And I also said that his second time around, McDaniel's second time around as a coordinator in New England, he's looking at that. He's looking at Bill Belichick up close, but from a head coach's eyes. Okay, now he can appreciate a little bit different that dynamic of how he deals with players, how he deals with his coaches, because he's been there before. I have a lot of high expectations for McDaniels and this offense. And I think that the only reason why we're 21st ranked right now is what you said. We have a lot of unproven players. We have a lot of high-end players in certain positions across the board. But there's a lot of prove-it guys out there. There's a couple of guys at linebacker that are prove-it guys. There's pretty much a damn near whole secondary that's prove-it guys. A lot of guys along the offensive line who are prove-it guys. But once they go out there and they show that they're solid players, that can be high teens easy.
It almost doesn't make sense if you think about it. The way this team is kind of built, and you look at the 2019 draft class, and you have obviously Max Crosby and Hunter Renfrow and guys like that are studs. But you could really say on the paper that the first round picks, you know, were just guys. They were just guys that maybe aren't going to get a second contract with this team. And then you have a 2020 draft of two first round picks that are not even in the league anymore. One dude's killed somebody. I mean, it's a total like teams. That's why last year's playoff run can't be undersold, because you had so much adversity, and then the head coach stuff. Like, you have drafts where you don't hit on any of your players. Like, you missed on five first-round picks. I know Josh Jacobs could do some things, and he could be a good player sometimes. But as of right now, you basically missed on five first-round picks, and you still had a team that was built to go to the playoffs. So that's why, like, last year didn't make much sense. And to me, if I was a Josh McDaniels going in there and said, like, guys, you had no business being in the playoffs last year of what this roster was made of. Now let me come in here. Let me bring some of my guys in here. Let me bring in the best receiver in the National Football League in Devontae Adams. And I think you're kind of, you know, cooking with gas a little bit. But it's really on the surface, on paper, Josh McDaniels walking in, there had to be a reason why he took this job after all the crap that this team has been through the past 20 years, and especially the past 2 years when it comes to roster building.
When I have my solo shows, I get into, like, I have to calm myself down when people say, well, you know what, you hit on some draft picks and you miss. And if you miss on a first rounder and you get a fifth rounder, that's fine. I'm like, no. You have to keep that first rounder on your roster because of how much money. Like, you don't have to keep a fourth rounder on your roster if he doesn't pan out.
No,
like the first rounder you do because you owe him so much money.
It's one thing too. In the 2019 guys, like, we talk about Jacobs and Abram and Clee Farrell that are still on this team and they still could have good years this year and earn second contracts. Again, Henry Ruggs and Damon Arnett were probably two of the biggest, you know, the Ruggs situation is what it is, but probably two of the worst draft picks in the history of the National Football League. Like, we're going to be sitting here as old men in 20 years saying, wow, can you remember those guys? Like, how bad those situations turned out. And it's still like, yes, Max Crosby, Alec Ingold were good players. Hunter Renfrow is awesome. But if you hit on two of those guys, if you drafted Devin White over Clee Farrell, if you drafted Montez Sweat over Jonathan Abram, something like that, if you hit on two of those studs, think about where this team would be now. You had a playoff team last year. Think about if you had those types of players on the rosters. It's frustrating at times, but it's also fulfilling to say, like, hey, that's why this team was a playoff team last year and why Josh McDaniels took over.
Clay Farrell's getting $8 million.
That's fucking nuts, man. Yeah,
but, he didn't pick himself, RJ. He didn't pick himself.
I can still hate him. I can still hate him. I am holding my right to hate Clay Farrell for taking $8 million of my money. I feel like it's my money, that salary cap.
I'm not hating the player. I'm hating his game. That's what doing.
Let's hate Mike Mayock for taking not trading back and taking him at four. But
look, you know what? So he had a trade in place that the team backed out, and then he had a second team that he feel wasn't enough value. I said, motherfucker, who cares at this point? He's still going to be there in the early teens. Mm-hmm. Who cares if they give you a fifth along with the first? You're still getting more. And it's like, oh, my, and you have to pay him as much.
It's easy to say hindsight's 2020, but Devin White was always my guy. Think about that dude in silver and black wrecking people right now.
That's what's most frustrating about these round one whiffs. It wasn't like it's, you know, Baker Mayfield, where everyone thought he'd be good and it just didn't pan out, right? It was like Damon Arnett. Like, he wasn't even like he wasn't even the third best DB on his
corner on his team.
Yeah. Right? It's
like at that point, just skip the pick and be like, all right, we'll take it. You know, like you pick ahead of us, and we'll come back. Like
take them all.
Pull a Viking. Like wait,
I'll take you inside a little bit because RJ knows I worked for NFL radio for a long time, so I produced a lot of drafts. So I would always have the earpiece in my ear and hear the pick before I came on to make sure that you know everybody was in line. There were two times I wanted to throw my headset. One was Darius Heyward-Bey, who I know turned out to have a decent career, but Darius Heyward-Bey and Damon Arnette were two times where I literally wanted to take my headset and just launch it into space and be like, I don't want to do this anymore. Someone please come in and fill in for me because I can't take this no more.
That was Jonathan Abram for me. I'm like, yeah. Wait a second. If we would have drafted him 15 years earlier, he would have been a prototypical safety in the NFL. Yeah, I said, he's not that type of safety that, you know, he's not a cover safety. Like that's what you need out of a safety.
Yeah.
He's basically a run stuffing corner is what safeties are nowadays.
Yeah. I know. Sorry to bring up bad memories here, boys.
Well, let's get some good stuff.
So my chest.
The players we did draft well, right? Derek Carr just got another extension this year. Hunter Renfrow got an extension. Max Crosby got an extension. The only like core guy that hasn't is Darren Waller. 2 years left, no guaranteed money. He'll be the 17th highest paid tight end next season. Where are you on Waller? Are you like extend him now for the respect? Are you like, nah, let's wait, middle ground somewhere? Like, what should the Raiders do with Darren Waller like right now, July 2022?
See, I think it's a different type of situation with Darren Waller because Waller's story was so dynamic and so, you know, kind of out of left field. He was, you know, basically on the Ravens practice squad. The Raiders kind of saw him and said, this guy could be a stud. He obviously had his addiction problems. And they came to him. It's not like this is his first, you know, contract extension. The Raiders took care of him when he showed that he could play well. And I understand that's not the business. I don't think, and Waller's camp is probably pushing for it, but he is coming off a season where he missed some time. He battled some injuries. I think if he goes into this year and you know, Dave Ziegler says, hey, you know, operate in good faith here. And I understand how hard that is for NFL players because they had one injury and they're kind of screwed. But he's one of the best players on this roster. He's one of the best tight ends in the National Football League. There were times last year when I kind of saw, I don't know what it was from it. Maybe he was just battling injuries and kind of shown, but to me, I would make it a priority to sign Waller, and I don't know if that means in the middle of the season, in the beginning of the season, or the middle of the season. But he's a core player. You want to lock up guys like this, and you want them to be happy. You don't want guys, you know, especially on a team like this that stuck together through all those things last year. And now he sees guys. RJ, and so do you guys know. I mean, when's the last time the Raiders kept their own? When's the last time they signed, you know, quarterbacks back or Hunter Renfrow back? They don't do this that often. So I think it shows not only
they have cash now.
Yeah, Darren Waller and his camp, the kind of respect that he deserves, but I also think it shows other players that maybe are on a roster now or maybe you'll sign in the future to say, like, the Raiders are a team that's going to, you know, value my work and do it. So I think Waller is an important piece of this team. You know, Josh McDaniels is salivating at the thought of matching up Darren Waller, especially with Devontae Adams on the other side. So I think he's a big part of it. I don't think you'll get it. I don't think you'll see it before training camp is over, but maybe during the year they can come to some type of agreement and say, we want to keep you here long term, because I think he's that important to this team.
I really do think it's going to be later in this year, if it's going to be this season, or maybe even, you know, in the off season, simply because I don't see Ziegler being somebody who is going to tip his hand a little too early. You know, you talk about taking care of your own all you want, but it's still a business. You still have a job to do.
Yeah.
And ultimately, there's no tight end that's up for an extension that's going to move that needle past Kittle's contract anyway. So waiting a season or a half season or whatever is not going to hurt you, because no one's going to pass no one's going to move the mark past Kittle anyway. So that mark, that 15 mil a year is already set. So it's not going to move. It's not going to go anywhere in a year.
He's also approaching 30, you know, and business wise, I know Raider fans probably don't want to hear it, but he's approaching 30 years old. You want to make sure that he comes back strong this year, stays healthy, and proves that he's still one of the best players. Because you know, as you know, you guys know, bodies break down and stuff like that. I have no doubt that he will, but you want to make sure that this guy's going into his prime now. He kind of started late, obviously, with all the addiction stuff. So I think he's really hitting his stride. And like I said, I think in this Josh McDaniels offense, he's always going to get his catches because Carr loves him on third down, loves him to move the sticks. But I think this is the year we see the Darren Waller explosion with touchdowns, because the red zone has been the you know, the hard part for this team for so long. I think with McDaniels and what he's bringing in, I think you'd see a lot more Darren Waller TDs in the red zone especially.
Well, he's also going to, you know, find the matchups and put Waller in positions to succeed. He's not like a, like we talked about this all the time, RJ. He's not like a Gruden that's going to say, well, I don't have a play that does specifically that. This play is close. We'll just run this. It's like, no, dude, just fucking draw one up on your goddamn hand. Like, you just do that. Put him in a position. Find a guy, you know, a DB gets hurt on the other team and they got a backup in there. Just throw Waller at him and tire. Like, he's, you know.
Yeah, so, and to your point, too, I they do have money to play with right now. I know Ndamukong Suh, RJ and I were talking about this off the air. You know, the Ndamukong Suh factor, you want that bully in the middle. I think as we get closer to training camp here, you want to kind of keep a little cash in your pocket, too, just in case there's some injuries or some things come up that you didn't, you know, someone gets dangled in the trade market. I think you want to see how some of these position battles break out in camp and then maybe have some cash to go out there and do some things. Gives you some flexibility heading into training camp because, you know, they're playing the first preseason game versus the Jaguars. They're going to have an extra load on them. So even though the starters probably won't play, I'd like to keep that in the back of the, you know, back of the pocket a little bit.
Eddie's been watching my show because that's exactly what I said. You don't use this money this year when you don't have to sign the guy. It's silly. You use the money to get
more. RJ wants to go all in, baby. All in. Let's go.
Like, oh, RJ would get basic everybody common sense and arithmetic too, Soto. Wow. Real cutting edge takes there, Soto. Don't spend money we don't have to. Wow.
Let me give Derek Carr everything, even though he wasn't signed for it. Let me just give him extra money because goddamn angel.
So you've been at SiriusXM NFL for like what 15-ish years now, right?
NFL probably closer to about 12 years. I was there for a long time.
Okay. Yep. Oh, sorry. I made you sound older than you were. Of all the hosts that have gone through there, which one were you like, all right, this dude is not going to pan out. He's so boring. And then he shows up and you're like, wow, this guy's great. I'm glad we got him.
You know, it's funny you say that. There's a couple guys that kind of come to mind. It's two. One of them is an executive type deal. One of them is Bill Polian. And the reason I say Bill Polian, and then I'll give you a player one after that. Bill Polian has that kind of monotone type of deal where you're like, all right, it's going to be super boring. I can listen to Bill Polian talk, and maybe it's just the historian, you know, aspect of it. You're like, oh my God, like he goes on these like 10-minute diatribes. And you know this, you guys know this in the radio world. You're like, oh my God, please stop talking. But for him, it was always like, keep talking more, keep saying things, keep talking. And he was so entertaining in some of his stories, and I just ate up all the stories. And the other guy is Brett Favre. Like Favre, he wasn't doing big shows for us, he was only doing an hour. Like Favre always had the name cachet, and you always saw him on those, you know, documentaries and the Football Lives stuff. He's always joking around, goofing around. But like the dude loves football, and like his interviews and the way people gravitate towards him, it's incredible. So those are the kind of the two guys where I thought they might not be long for this radio stuff, and they both kind of made careers out of it.
I was going to say, there's no way, when you said Brett Favre, there was no way you're going to say, like, he showed up early to every production meeting, he had a no. pile of notes. He
did. He's not going to any host workshops.
You know there was none of that. No. he's just natural.
He's still Brett Favre, and he's still got that way about him. He's big into bike riding now. He's got a different life he had now. But yeah, there's definitely he was one of those guys when the lights came on, he kind of really turned on. The one, I don't know if I want to go down this road that I thought.
You're gonna say Rich Gannon, aren't you?
Listen, Gannon's my guy. I can't say nothing about Rich Gannon. But no, the one that Raider fans will love. The one guy that I thought was gonna be bad and turned out that he really wasn't good. Was Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice was early on in my career back then when I was doing shows. And Jerry, as awesome of a player as he was, the best of all time, just radio wasn't his thing. So he was a guy that it was definitely a struggle at times, even though it was awesome to work with him because he's freaking Jerry Rice.
Dude, he had took a picture with Davante Adams recently. Man, that guy looked good. He looked bigger than Devontae.
Jerry is the ultimate athlete. He's still running. He's still doing all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's got the commercials with Brett Favre. You say he wears those metal things on him. That gives him like bionic speed. Who the hell he is? The
copper shit or whatever the hell that is.
The copper shit. There you go. Nah, Jerry.
Before I let you get out of here, with the Raiders now in Vegas, it just makes it so easy to want to visit them. But they have an awesome road schedule as far as just like games you want to go to. New Orleans, Nashville, twice in LA, Seattle. Like, there are some awesome games. If there's one, you could only go to one game next season, Eddie. Which one would it be? And it could be because of the city, it could be because of the matchup, it could be because you think it's going to be like winner goes to the playoffs. Which game? You only go to one.
I
Hall of Fame game, Jaguars.
Yeah, seriously. I'm torn here, to be fair, because Nashville is probably my favorite city in the United States.
Either that or Austin.
Yeah, Austin's also awesome. So Nashville is such a cool venue. You get to go there early on, so the weather won't be super crappy. But I'm going to go nostalgic. Even though they're not the same team without Big Ben, I would say at Pittsburgh, the day before Christmas, you know, the Steelers, even though Mitch Trubisky's the quarterback, they're probably still going to be in the AFC mix. It's going to be, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of the – like, you have so much – history between those two teams, and you know the weather's going to be crap, even though it's probably bad for the Raiders. So I'm a big – that's, like, kind of my thing, like the history of the game, you know, old-school matchup, Raiders-Steelers. And I think a day before Christmas, late in the season, probably two teams vying for playoff spots in the AFC. I think if I had to go to one, I think it would be Pittsburgh.
I don't feel like there's a team that can appreciate the history of its franchise better than Raider fans. Like, you're way too young to remember the Steelers rivalry. Like, it didn't exist when we were like...
But I'm a Raider fan because of watching NFL films and watching John Facenda talk about the Raiders-Steelers matchup and seeing Jack Tatum go after Lynn Swann. Like, I'm a fan of this team because of those matchups. You know, every time I pass the Franco Harris statue in the Pittsburgh airport, I give it the finger. Like, I'm still like, that's me, man. So, like, I love this football team because of, you know, the long storied history. And Raiders Steelers, there's nothing more important than, especially back in the day, than that rivalry back in the 70s, even though the Steelers got the best of them the most. But if you are not a fan of history and the Raiders, then you're not a fan of football, because, you know, take the last 20 years out of it. Before that, the Raiders were a major part of what the NFL and the AFL is today. So if you're not a fan of history, you're definitely not a Raider fan. You got to be involved.
Pittsburgh was one of mine because they like doing the French fries and gravy inside the sandwich.
Yes.
Which is always a plus.
I'm not a big fan of that, man. It gets soggy. It gets real soggy.
You got to have a good base, man. You got to elbows out. You got to have that good base.
I guess you got to wolf it down your throat like a pelican, like soda. Yeah. Not let it get soggy. Listen, that's the key. If you eat it like a gentleman. You got to have 12 beers
before it, too. Yeah,
exactly.
What do you think in the draft when it was the Raiders pick coming up and they bring out Franco Harris?
Dude,
I thought that was
and it's the best trash. Because this is the last draft that I worked for NFL Radio, and they were like, "Can you get Franco off the stage, please?" And I'm like, "Could I go out there and just be like, Franco, get the hell off the stage? You know you didn't catch that ball. Get off the stage and stop taking away from the thunder of this." But yeah, like, it's little stuff like that kind of makes it cool, and especially, you know, we're 50 years later, I'm still talking about it. So I think that's going to be an electric, and it's going to be an electric type atmosphere in Pittsburgh, to say the least. Even if the Steelers are not the same Steelers team without Big Ben.
My second favorite time watching NFL films is remembering how you could like a DDT was a legal tackle back then. Unless you literally pulled out a shank and stabbed somebody in the chest, like, dude, whatever contact you made was totally fine.
Talk about the Steeler Raider robbery. Like, Mel Blount literally picked up Cliff Branch and literally gave him like the tombstone, like in the middle of the field, and there was no penalty called. Like, those are the things back in the day that a lot of the purists miss about pro football, but you don't get that nowadays. He literally picked up, and it was the referee just looked at him like, okay, cool. Like, you know, next play, let's go. I'm like, okay,
Now, if you fart next to Tom Brady, it's 15 yards.
I saw Matt Millen grab a guy, which would be a horse collar right now,
and
slow him down and club him across his face. That was the tackle.
It's a good old
hockey fight technique.
But it was a good old tackle. The good old days.
That was great. His name's Eddie Brasilli. You can catch him on the Yards Per Attempt podcast. 13-ish years at SiriusXM NFL. Now he's at SiriusXM Fight Nation. Hey, this is great. Thanks for coming on, bud.
It's a pleasure, guys. I had a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime.
Done. All right, Eddie, that was great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's always nice when I can get my boss on our show.
To come on your show?
Yeah.
I should have said, you know what, Eddie? You're not as big an asshole as RJ said you were. I think you're a really nice guy.
It's funny, afterwards we texted, he told me, he's like, yeah, that Soto guy isn't as big of an asshole as you said he was. So we're breaking barriers.
That's not true.
Left and right. You're right. He's bigger. He's a bigger asshole.
Gaping asshole.
So the giant news today, and we're recording this Wednesday night, July 6th. The big news today is the Browns. You're already laughing.
So bad.
Have traded Baker Mayfield to the Carolina Panthers for a conditional fifth-round pick.
Could be a fourth.
Could be a – oh, hey, whoa, whoa, hey. Talk about getting caught with your pants down. Man, these Panthers, they're rich. Giving up a fifth? Oh, my. Lord have mercy.
Hey, you know what? That's probably the fifth that we gave him for fucking Perryman.
you get Baker Mayfield, we get Denzel Perryman. What a deal.
Oh,
what a fantastic deal. Baker was the first overall.
First number one overall
number
pick.
One overall number draft one. Pick, right? And it was a first round. It was close. Number one overall draft pick getting sent away to carry. Are the Carolina Panthers even a real football team? I feel like they're the Jaguars, oh, right? Man, I know they exist, but they're like the teams that SEC teams pay to play home games against week one. You know what I mean?
Look, that's man, how I feel about I'm going to say something. I'm going to say something that's not very popular. The Panthers.
Why, they just need love too? No.
The Panthers are where we were a few years ago, where we had some players, we had some names, we just couldn't put it together.
Without the history, though. Without, like, a fan base.
Honestly, none of those players are coming to play right now. I'm talking about this year right now. That's what they remind me of. They remind me of a team that has some stars, that have some players, they just can't put it together. And they always end up shitting on their own feet.
But wait, there's more. And it gets better.
This is so bad.
According to Mike Garofalo, the Browns will pay Baker Mayfield $10.5 million this season.
Mm.
The Browns, the team that he is not playing for, the Browns, his old team, are going to pay Baker Mayfield $10.5 million to play somewhere else, which means they trimmed over $8 million in cash and salary cap. The Panthers will pay Mayfield $5 million. And here's the real kicker. Mayfield agreed to trim $3.5 million off his base salary. He's like, look, I'll take less money. Browns, you pay me 10. The team I'm actually playing for, you give me 5. That's how little anybody wants Baker Mayfield.
I mean, it was a smart move for Baker because if he... Sure. The last taste of Baker Mayfield that anyone in the NFL has in their mouth is last season when he was hurt. Mm-hmm. So he's going to make up that $3.5 million if he plays anywhere near how he did with the Browns in the previous years.
He'll be able to be a starter.
He'll be a starter from day one. He'll go in as the starter. He's got to go in there and he's got to be humble, work hard, and not fucking try to swing that big first overall pick dick around. Just, you know what? Go in there and be one of the guys and show that you're willing to do everything you're asking of everybody else. But that's how little your old team thought of you and of your prospects moving forward, that they're paying $10.5 million to play against you.
And literally week one.
The week one, yes.
Browns play the Panthers.
And the Browns can give two shits. They have a career backup in Brissett, who's probably going to be the week one starter. And he's
probably going to be the week 17 starter. Like, everything that's going on with Deshaun Watson, like, there's still four girls holding out on that lawsuit.
I'm telling you something right now, man. I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL said, you know what, 24 civil lawsuits, you're going to be suspended 24 fucking games. I wouldn't be surprised.
That's, do a whole year, whole season?
A whole season plus. A whole season and 7 more games. That's 24 right there.
I think the over/under is one full season.
It's gonna be. I think it's gonna be at least a full season.
I think one full. Well, I mean, that's a giant suspension for someone who isn't charged with a crime, right?
Look, man, we all know what it's about. You can say it like it is in paper. He wasn't charged. Look, come on. We all know
what did Ray Rice get for knocking out his fiance,
his wife? I mean, he got his career taken away, basically.
But the suspension was less than a season, wasn't it? Like, he became untouchable.
I think it was
untouchable.
Like 6 to 8 games or something
but
like that.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, right? Like, that's what I'm saying here. Like, we got to talk about, like, context is important. Like,
okay, yes. You're talking about a singular incident.
Caught on video.
Okay, again.
Dragging her by the hair out of an elevator.
I'm not saying it's any better or any worse, but you're talking about one singular incident as opposed to a premeditated, constant, you know, instance over and over again with multiple different people.
I wonder if there was any universe where the Browns thought to themselves, we're not sure if Deshaun is going to play next season, so let's keep Baker. I can't imagine Baker being in that facility in any fashion was good.
No, because the thing is, look, once you even go out there and put your hat in the ring for Deshaun Watson, you're telling everyone on your team, we're moving on from Baker Mayfield. Because if they didn't get him, I wouldn't be surprised if they would have traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. Because once you do that, and once Baker Mayfield reacts the way he does, who can respect him in that locker room? I don't think anyone can respect him in the locker room. First off, I don't know how many people were on his side anyway after the whole OBJ shit and just how poorly he played last year. I think he lost a lot of his teammates in that respect, how he handled all this stuff with the whole, you know, let's try to court Deshaun Watson thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, come on, man. Like, enough is enough. You think that you're a lot better than you are just because you were drafted highly. Well, guess what? You haven't played like it. So, I honestly think that he lost the locker room. He lost the confidence of the executives upstairs, ownership. And I think that they were going to move on from him regardless.
Can he still do those progressive commercials, but at Bank of America Stadium in Carolina instead?
I mean, I don't know if the progressives are going to want to put their name on his ass.
I mean, is it who would have to do those commercials now? Like, remember in Talladega Nights when his first sponsor was like clown malt liquor?
Yeah.
It was like the cheapest thing you could buy at a liquor store, and then he starts winning, and then he got like Weber and like all these like good sponsors.
Wonder Bread across the windshield.
Instead of him like being at Brown Stadium, like acting like he owns the place for a progressive commercial, it's just gonna be him like under a bridge in North Carolina drinking a bottle of Mickey's. That's gonna be that's all the sponsorships he'll have left.
Warm Mickey's.
That was my drink of choice for like 9 months.
You're disgusting.
When you're 19, you drink disgustingly. You're like,
this can get me drunk fast.
Well, like, look, this is $1.79 for 40 ounces of malt liquor. I'll take two, thank you.
And I'm good for the faster I guzzle the first one and I sip on the second, and I'm good. Under $5.
Yeah, and you're set.
And my dick don't work because I'm drunk.
Yeah, because you're drunk. You know what makes it really feel like football season?
What?
The week one betting lines are out.
Ooh.
Getting that jingle. I'm getting that bluish hue down in my plums. It's feeling real.
Bro, look at that. Look at my birthday, September 8th on Thursday. Look at that. Bills and Rams. That's a good one.
So week one, Sunday, September 11th, Raiders, Chargers. Chargers -4 at Chargers. I know it's technically a Chargers home game, but we all know it's a Raider home game. Every Charger home game is technically a home game for the visiting team.
Yeah.
Chargers -4, despite the fact we beat them in week 18 last season, despite the fact we've improved so drastically, despite the fact it's basically going to be a home game for the Raiders, Chargers getting 4 points. Do you like that line? Or Chargers giving up 4.
Chargers giving 4. So, I mean, the rule of thumb basically is the home team gets 3 points. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, if it was a neutral site, you'd be like a -1. So, I mean, the bigger thing you want to take a look at is...
Do you think the bookies actually count this as a Charger home game?
Technically, they have to. I guess.
They don't have to do anything. Like, they could be like, yeah, this is going to be 80% Raider fans.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think by that formula, the -1 is probably about right. The bigger thing to look at is the plus minus here. The Raiders are +155. Chargers are -180. So... Again, I think it's about right. I think it's about right for an opening game. You're not sure what you're getting with the Raiders with Josh McDaniels. You're not sure, you know, what you're going to have outside of another couple of people.
And the Chargers generally start strong and then they flounder late, right? Like they fall on their dicks later in seasons, but they generally start strong.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many questions. Like we talked about it last week, and we talked about it with Eddie. It's there's so many question marks right now, especially defensively. We have some top-end stars on our team, but the depth is going to be a big question mark. Can they handle the more intricate scheme? Because when they had a more intricate scheme with Gunther, a lot of these players didn't do well. So we'll see. You know, it's going to be – there's a lot of question marks here, a lot of unanswered questions. So because of that, I think that more so than anything, if let's say this was McDaniels and Graham's second year in, I think it would be a lot different.
How about this? Over-under – 52.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt it.
That's the second highest over-under of week one. Only Chiefs-Cardinals at 53 is higher. That's kind of bonkers, right? That's 10 more than Saints-Falcons. That's 10 more than Niners-Bears. 10 more? Obviously, it feels like the bookies are really believing in both offenses and not buying that the defenses have gotten their act together, right? The Chargers had the worst rushing defense in the NFL last season. Raiders were improved since the Gunther years, but still well below average. Adding Chandler Jones, Denzel Perryman's proven to be a Pro Bowler. Max Crosby's only 1 year better. All of our rookies in the defensive backfield, one season better. Still a lot of question marks, and I'm not going to say they're good, but, almost every position, got better, other than losing Casey Hayward. That was the one thing where I can say, all right, this position definitely got worse.
Well, one season better than being 26th in the league. Mm-hmm. So how much better is that?
20th? Almost average?
I mean, still again,
the highest over-under?
You're assuming that players are going to get – the unit's going to get better. I'm not saying that they're not. I think they will. But you have to take a look at it from that type of perspective is, yeah, let's say they get better from 26, but that means that no one else got better in the league.
So are you taking the over?
Yeah, I probably would take the over.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a shootout.
A lot of points.
I think it's going to be a shootout, man. And I think one of the good things about Josh McDaniels is he shows you absolutely bupkis in the preseason. He's not going to run anything close to what he's going to run in the regular season in the preseason. He's going to just this is all for evaluation purposes only. We're going to get all the wrinkles out during practice. This game speed, that's what I want. I want to know if you can listen, if you can execute. That's what I'm worried about. All the other little wrinkles, we'll get that stuff during practice. For as far as this goes, that's why I can definitely see the Raiders running up a big number, because, man, they're going to come in and they're going to throw some shit at the freaking Chargers that they have never seen before. Mm-hmm.
So that's the one AFC West divisional game of week one. Chiefs and Broncos, both on the road against NFC teams. Chiefs only giving up 3 points to the Cardinals in Phoenix, and the Broncos only giving up 4 points to the Russell Wilson-less Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. So Chiefs 3-point favorites, Broncos 4-point favorites.
I don't like going against home dogs, especially early in the season. That's usually when they play their best early in the year.
They don't realize they suck yet.
Well, they're just all pumped up, and again, it's like the new shit, you know. I mean, that means Geno Smith or Drew Lock is going to be the quarterback, or maybe Jimmy Garoppolo. Who knows?
Real quick, before we get to Wide Windbags, the Raiders are announcing a new president tomorrow, Thursday, July 7th. 1 o'clock p.m. West Coast Standard Time, they will announce their new president. And it'll be the third president in a year. We've talked extensively of the upheaval that's been the front office. We're getting very caught up in everything that's good that's happening in offseason. You know, new coaches, new players. Things are looking good on the field, which is 99% of what we care about. Generally, front office mayhem doesn't affect the on-field as much drastically. Good ownership, I think, plays a very big role. But as far as like who the treasurer and controller are, not that drastic. But new team president, pretty big deal.
Our third in like 10 months or something like that.
Yeah. I'm not even going to try to guess who it's going to be. I just have one request. And this is something I've talked about a lot on this show. The Raiders need to stop being a purely ma and pa shop. They need to stop. I get it. Like, Mark Davis loves guys that have been there a long time, loves guys that bleed silver and black, love guys that have been there a long time, love guys that put their sweat equity, blood equity in. And that's good. And there's a place for that. There's absolutely a place for that. But this is a multi-billion dollar organization. This is a massive, this isn't a taco stand. Like this is a massive corporation with billions of dollars. You need to have smart people in the right places. Now, but you also need to have a balance, right? So if you have nothing but Harvard MBAs in your organization, you don't have any real world experience. You don't have any guys that have had to like find shortcuts, have had to do things the hard way. It's a bunch of guys, you know, rich kids that had great educations and been able to cakewalk through life. Smart and academically wise, but they don't have any street smarts. On the flip side, you can't have nothing but street smarts guys. Like you need dudes that are going to be able to not pay the IRS too many taxes. And that was what happened. You need a balance. And so because the Raiders have been such a mom-pa shop for so long, this is where they should go get some Ivy League dude, some super smart guy that smokes a pipe, wears suspenders, be the academic guy. You've got plenty of street smart guys. Get an academic guy that can steer this ship and treat it like the billion-dollar franchise, that it, multi-billion-dollar organization that it is.
Yeah, man, like Davis went against the norm and went somewhat out of his sphere of influence with the GM and head coach hire. And look how it's worked out so far. So go out of the sphere of influence, you know, don't pick a guy, the best guy on your, in your talent pool that you already have.
Yeah.
Get the right person for the job. Please don't be RJ.
What if that's what the surprise hire? They're like, all right, we're really shocking you guys.
I'm going to kick you right in the balls.
I almost graduated college. I probably am still one of the most educated guys in that front office.
By choice. I didn't graduate by choice.
By choice. It's true. I bounced when I wanted to. Ready to do some what up windbags?
Yes, sir.
All right. YouTube twat waffles in response to where did the Raiders roster rank? He said 24th. It's not so much the question or the answer that he gave. I just wanted to shout out the username YouTube twat waffles. That's the greatest name that's ever existed on the internet.
Yeah, he's done a comment on us before saying that we're not real Raider fans and all this shit.
He's saying you're not a real Raider fan.
No.
He didn't say that to me.
He said it to both of us.
No, yeah.
Dude, hey, RJ, hey, you love
me
to
and
say
YouTube
that
twat waffles are like this, all right?
Yeah, I bet.
What do you think is, like, who's YouTube twat waffles, like, cousin? Instagram
YouTube
pancakes?
YouTube blue waffles.
Carlos Enfuego. RJ, what do the Raiders need to draft next year? Linebackers, corners, safety, or another position? Raider Nation for
yes.
Life.
Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. It's never too early to look forward to the next draft. They should treat this next draft the exact same way they treated the last draft. Best player available, value to what's available.
Give me a star. I want stars. I want guys that are going to make impact. I'm not a proponent of, oh yeah, he's a good depth guy. Like, dude, I don't like, we can find depth guys anywhere. I need a guy that can go in there and make something happen. And that's how you create. I mean, depth is only good if the players that are on the bench are good players.
Mm-hmm.
So get yourself the best player that's there.
You know? What does the draft offer? Go there, right? Last draft, they had a bunch of like cheap, good running backs, bunch of cheap, good linemen. What do we get? Linemen and running backs.
That's
right?
Exactly what I said pre-draft. There's so many offensive linemen in this draft. We're going to get a quality player by the time we pick in the third round. There'll still be quality players available, and that's what we got.
The Raiders have built the roster, and even with all our, you know, with a handful of guys on one-year contracts and a handful of contracts being done this year, there's still not giant gaping holes. Where like we were forced to get Leatherwood, we were forced to get Jonathan Abram, we were, you know, forced to get Amari Cooper. Like, best guy available when you get there, and you can move around a little bit, right? If you desperately need a tackle, and you know you're torn between a tackle, a safety, and a receiver, then you could, you know, you can lean to a little bit towards need, but just don't reach, And the Raiders have a roster where they're not going to be forced to reach, so don't get greedy. Don't fall in love. Fall in like with players, don't fall in love with players. So I'm not even saying a position.
No, you shouldn't. And honestly, guys, look what happened last year. Well, right before the season, the preseason ended, we got Denzel Perryman.
Yep.
And he ended up being one of our best defensive players.
Led us in tackles, pro bowler. Yeah.
So it's like the guys are still out there, you know, and that's why I said I don't think that we're going to have a poor offensive line this year, because if there's any holes in our offensive line, we're going to go out and plug them. We're not going to just roll guys out there just because that's who we have. Mm-hmm. That's not the style of Josh McDaniels. That's not what he learned. That's not where he was taught.
Last one, the truth. And this is a response to, I was talking to my live show yesterday, how Brett Favre is saying Devontae Adams probably won't have the same caliber a year without Aaron Rodgers. Brett Favre played for the Jets towards the end of his career, trying to save it. You don't have room for opinions, old man. I disagree. I think Brett Favre is a passionate football guy. Like, we just had Eddie on that said he's surprisingly like one of the best radio hosts that he's ever worked with at mm-hmm. NFL Radio at SiriusXM, because, yeah, he's not doing his homework and have a stack of notes and like super prepared. But when there's a passion for football, like, you acquire that knowledge and you have, you know, some thought to it. And even though, like, all the headlines were, you know, Brett Favre says Devontae Adams will never be the same without Aaron Rodgers, he was pretty complimentary. He said, yeah, I think Derek Carr is very good. I think him and Devontae will be a dynamic duo one day, if not right away. You know, they're you know, Derek Carr and Aaron Rodgers are very different quarterbacks and blah, 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 blah. And of course, he's going to hype his, like, team's quarterback. And it's not hard to hype Aaron Rodgers, right? The stack of
2-time reigning MVP.
Yeah. So I don't think Brett Favre's had anything too out of line.
It wasn't bad, because, look, honestly, he's going from a situation where he was the target to a situation where he's going to be the main target, but there's also two other very good targets out there, better than anything he's played with. So you're going to have that. Plus,
I said his production will drop because he's sharing with Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow and running backs.
As far as Carr not being on par with Aaron Rodgers, I don't know that anyone in their right mind would say that Derek Carr is as good a football player. Just forget situation. Just add as good a football player. Like, Aaron Rodgers is just a better quarterback. That doesn't mean Derek Carr is not a good quarterback. That doesn't mean Derek Carr can't win. That doesn't mean Derek Carr can't win a Super Bowl. It's just Aaron Rodgers is just better. And I don't know that we're not going to see that type of pairing like Devontae had with Aaron Rodgers. I think we're going to see something very close because of the familiarity, because of Derek Carr's propensity to throw to somebody who's covered sometimes. I mean, he gets a lot of pass interferences. And he likes throwing jump balls sometimes to people that he feels comfortable with. He threw the last play, his pass of the season was to a quadruple covered Zay Jones. So if he's comfortable with you, he'll feed you the ball.
Derek Carr is 10 times better than Aaron Rodgers at picking tattoos.
Okay. I can see that. More.
All right. That's it for us. Soto put in some overtime. He's going to start doing some almost nightly live chats with all y'all. I'm doing the editing and stuff and the big shows. He's doing the live chat. So as news starts to like break throughout the week and you don't want to wait until Thursday to hear us talk about it, Soto's got you covered. So make sure you subscribe on YouTube, see it coming up, and you will enjoy it. You'll be smarter from it. Until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Auto Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those places. Just look us up. Trust me, it'll be worth your time. Thank you to Eddie Berselli as well. And until next time, later.